well. So, technology is an interesting thing. Even like with the buzz in the sound system. Sometimes when there are things that go on like that, we know what we know, and we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes it's better to step back and say, I don't know what I don't know, rather than to pretend that we do know what we don't know. For example, I know that I don't know how to use all the bells and whistles and features and all of that on the phone that I have. And I, let alone the phones that have been released after the one that I have, and the updates that have been released on the phone that I have with all the new features and bells and whistles, and I don't know how to use them. And there are some of them that I don't care. I don't care enough about them to go and figure out how to use them. However, there are other things that we don't know that we do care enough. For example, my dad, we do this Find My Friends, Find My Phone, Find My on the Apple devices and all that. And there was one night where we were meeting him at a restaurant for Danielle's birthday back in May. And he was a little bit late, which is not like him. And so one of the kids says, well, where's Grandpa? And I said, oh no, let me look. So I got out my phone and I looked, and it told me he was still at home. Well, he was supposed to be there. So I called him and I said, where are you? And he said, well, I'm just around the corner. I went to the wrong restaurant. But his Find My, though he was like less than a mile away from us, told us that he was at home. And so I started doing some research, because that's something that matters. That's something that I care about enough to figure out to know what I don't know. And I learned that he, for some reason, had his Find My connected to his iPad rather than his phone. So his iPad was always home, but he wasn't, and all that. So I found out how to switch it to his iPhone, because there are things that matter about what we don't know that we want to know, and we care enough to go figure out what we don't know. When it comes to people's relationships with God, there are things that people don't know, and there are things that people think they know about God. And they base what they believe and how they interact with God based on what they think they know, when it would in fact serve them well to do the work to find out what they do know and what they don't know. The early church leader Paul entered the pages of history as a Jewish Pharisee by the name of Saul. He was well educated. He was well trained. He was well thought of in the Jewish committee or Jewish community. He had risen through the ranks of the Jewish religious system and was likely one of the Jewish religious leaders at the time. And as a well-respected, well thought of, well-trained Jewish religious leader, Paul hated the Jesus movement. In fact, he hated the Jesus movement so much that he traveled the region doing everything that he could do to persecute followers of Jesus, have them arrested, even try to have some put to death, so that he could completely eradicate the Jesus movement as early as possible. So on one of his trips to eradicate and to persecute followers of Jesus, he was literally stopped on the road. It was on the road to Damascus, Syria. He was literally stopped by a blinding light and a voice that said, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? The voice that asked the question is Jesus. And that voice continues to tell Saul that he needs to go on to Damascus and he needs to meet a man named Ananias. And he'll be told what to do. And he meets Ananias, and Ananias tells him that Saul is the guy that God is going to use to launch the early church and invite people to follow Jesus. Now, remember, Paul hated the Jesus movement. And as someone who hated the Jesus movement and was trying to get rid of the Jesus movement altogether, this moment is truly a life-changing encounter. Not only does he encounter the resurrected Jesus, but the entire direction and the entire purpose of his life is being changed. From going to a persecutor of followers of Jesus to inviting people to follow Jesus. And in that process, Saul himself becomes a follower of Jesus. And so now, instead of traveling the region persecuting followers of Jesus, Saul is going to travel the region and he's going to invite people to follow Jesus. And during this time, he winds up in a town called Thessalonica. And when he's in Thessalonica, it says, As was Paul's custom, he went to the synagogue service, which was the service for Jewish people. And for three Sabbaths in a row, he used the scriptures to reason with the people. Now let's hold on that slide for a minute. Paul's custom, when he went into a town, was to go and engage with the culture, to engage with the community, to engage with the people. He started in the Jewish synagogues because he had relationships. There were people he knew. There were things that he had common ground with them as a fellow Jewish person. And so he would go into the synagogue, and he would, for three Sabbaths in a row, use the scriptures. So he would use the Jewish scriptures. He would use what those people knew to explain to them about Jesus being the Messiah, the one that they had waited for, the long-awaited Messiah who would rescue the Jewish people, who would redeem the nation of Israel and restore Israel as a nation and all of that. And so it says that he used to reason with them. The wording there is that he didn't go in and condemn them. He didn't go in and judge them. He didn't go in and point out all the things in their life and all the things in their world and everything that was wrong. He didn't go in and tell them, oh, you're off here, you're off here, you're off here. He took the Jewish scriptures and he said, these things that you believe point to Jesus as being the Messiah. There is wisdom in having an approach with people that is attractional rather than repulsive, rather than repelling people to draw them in. So go ahead and go to the next slide for me. He says he explained the prophecies. So he went to the Jewish scriptures and he went to the Old Testament, the Hebrew prophets, and he says, and he proved that the Messiah must suffer and rise from the dead. That's what their Jewish scriptures told them. That's what their prophets told them. And he's pointing to what they know and what they believe at the bedrock of their belief system. And then he said, this Jesus I'm telling you about is the Messiah. So he points them to Jesus. And there are some people in Thessalonica who believe. There are people who become followers of Jesus as a result of Paul's time with them and the result of Paul communicating and connecting with them and teaching them. But there were some who didn't believe. There were some who actually stirred up trouble against Paul and caused problems for Paul to the point that one night Paul leaves and goes to a place named Berea. Now, things were different in Berea than Thessalonica. It says, and the people of Berea were more open-minded than those in Thessalonica. And they listened eagerly to Paul's message. They searched the scriptures day after day to see if Paul and Silas were teaching the truth. Well, one of the things that we discover here is that there are people who are more open-minded to conversations about spiritual matters than some are. There are conversations that we can have about people or about Jesus with people, and then there are people we can't have conversations with because they, you know. Okay, growing up, did anybody else ever hear your parents say, I'm just talking to hear myself talk? Something to that effect. I had this past week a very interesting phone call at church, and I won't go into a lot of the details, but in the conversation, it became very clear to me that the individual who had called requesting help from us was not interested in having a conversation. He was not willing to listen. He became more and more agitated. And there was a point in time where I said to him, I said, "It seems to me that your mind is made up." And his response back was, "Yes, my mind's made up." And I said, "And it seems to me that you're not really interested in listening and having a conversation and hearing what I have to say about this at all." And he said, "You're right, I'm not willing to listen." And I said, "Then I don't really understand the point of continuing this conversation." He wasn't open-minded. His mind was already made up. He wasn't interested in listening. But the people in Berea were more open-minded than the people in Thessalonica. And they listened eagerly to Paul's message. And the other thing that's good that they did is it says they searched the Scriptures. So Paul used the Jewish Scriptures, pointed to the Jewish Scriptures, talked about the Old Testament prophets and how he proved that Jesus was the Messiah and all that. And they said, maybe. And they went and did the work for themselves. There is wisdom in testing what you're being told and testing what you're being taught to see if it is indeed true. Because what happens in that process is what we're being taught and what we're being told, when we discover the truth and we embrace it as our belief rather than the belief that's handed down to us, it becomes a belief that we are much more willing to live out, a belief that we are much more willing to hold on to. And as Jesus said, when we discover the truth, it is the truth that sets us free. So the people in Berea are much more open-minded than the people in Thessalonica. However, the people in Thessalonica who were upset with Paul while he was there remain upset enough with him that they go to Berea and they start stirring up trouble for Paul in Berea because of the message that he's communicating. So eventually, Paul and Silas, who was his traveling companion at the time of this story, Paul leaves Berea and goes to Athens. And when he gets to Athens, he's waiting for Silas and some others to come and show up. And so he's now in Athens. And it says, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was deeply troubled by all the idols he saw everywhere in the city. The city of Athens was littered with idols to the gods that the people of Athens worshipped and believed in and hoped they were right. So Paul, the Greek culture in Athens would have been a polytheistic culture, a belief in many different gods. And so they had idols set up to many different gods. Paul's background was monotheistic, one God, the God of the Jews, one God. And so as Paul, who believes in one God, goes around the city of Athens and sees many idols to many gods, he's deeply troubled because he goes everywhere in the city. And so one of the things that took place in Athens is people gathered around and they debated and they talked. And though there was a belief in many gods, there was a deep interest in spiritual things. And so people would talk about the latest things in life. They would gather together daily and they would talk about it. And so Paul would go through. He went to the churches. He went to the marketplace. He went everywhere he could go to talk to people about what it means to follow Jesus. And then he goes to a place, to the place in the city where the philosophers and the debaters gathered together and talked about the latest theories about the world and life and God and belief and all of that. And he has a debate with some Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. And as he engages in debate with them, people are listening. And so as Paul communicates to them about the things of God, they ask a fascinating question. They're listening, and Paul's talking about Jesus, and he's talking about the resurrection, and he's talking about the Jewish Messiah, and he's talking about all this stuff. He communicates everything about Jesus. And then their response is to ask this question. He says, what's this babbler trying to say with these strange ideas he's picked up? Others said, he seems to be preaching about some foreign gods. So the Greeks had their gods, and Paul comes in and talks about Jesus and God as creator, and they say, these are strange ideas. What's this babbler trying to say? If you look up the word babbler in the dictionary, it says one who babbles. And just so you know, if you look up in the word redundant in the dictionary, it says see redundant. I don't know if that's true. I just made that up. But it does. If you look up, it says, the word babbler says one who babbles. And that doesn't mean much if you don't know what the word babble means. So if you look up the word babble, it says to utter in an incoherent, foolish, or meaningless fashion. The ideas that Paul was communicating to the philosophers that he was debating were strange ideas to them because they'd never heard them before. They were strange ideas to them because the philosophers knew what they knew and they didn't know what they didn't know. And when Paul began communicating what they didn't know, it seemed strange. It seemed foreign. They knew what they knew. They didn't know what they didn't know. And it appears they didn't quite know what to do with Paul's message. Because it says, then they took him to the high council of the city. Now, often in the Bible, when we read high council, we talk about the Jewish high council. This is not the Jewish high council that he goes to. This is the high council in the city of Athens. So it would have been the Greeks, the Greek leaders in the high council city. And it says, come and tell us about this new teaching, they said. You are saying some rather strange things, and we want to know what it's all about. So there was an interest that was piqued for them. And the high council was the place where they took the worst criminals to decide their fate. It was also the place where they took the new strange ideas and let the high council tell them what was right and what was wrong and what was true and what was false and what they should believe and what they shouldn't believe. So the high council is a very powerful, influential group of people. Paul isn't taken there because he's being put on trial, but he is being taken there because the message that he's communicating is being put on trial. These strange new ideas. We want to hear more about them. We want to know. They say, we don't know what we don't know, but we want to know this. So come and tell us. So before the high council, Paul then addresses the high council and says, men of Athens, I noticed that you are very religious in every way. So he starts off affirming them, affirming their belief, affirming their heart's desire to be interested in spiritual matters. And it says, for as I was walking along, I saw your many shrines. And one of them, one of your altars had this description on it, to an unknown God. So Paul sees the many shrines, and he sees this unknown God. And unknown means we don't know. Unknown means we aren't confident. Unknown means we hope, just in case we've missed everywhere else. A shrine to an unknown God means I want to cover all of my bases. I want to make sure that of all the gods that we know and all the gods that we worship and all the gods that we built the statues to, I want to make sure that just in case we've missed something, just in case there's an unknown God. But there's also this dynamic. There's also this dynamic in play with them that there's something in them that knows. There's something in them that of all the gods that they worship, there's still a part of them that feels somehow, some way, there's an unknown God. There's something more than the God of all the shrines. And so Paul tells them that this unknown God isn't a God that wants to remain unknown. It's a God that wants to know and be known. It is the God of the Bible, the God of the Jews, the God that sent Jesus. It is this God who is the unknown God. It's this God. I'm telling you about Him, and I want you to know. The Greeks would have believed that their gods were evident in and through nature. And so Paul leverages what they know to tell them that this God that he's talking about, He is the God who made the world and everything in it. It isn't that God is evident and in it. It isn't that God is evident in and through nature because like your different Greek gods, they go over certain aspects of nature. It's this God is evident in and through nature because He created it all and He governs it all. He made the world and everything in it. And so He's not just the God of the sea. He's not just the God of the sun. He's not the God of the wind. Not just the God of the wind. He's God over it all because He made it all. The world and everything in it. And so when you go to your known gods, this unknown God wants to be known as the one God. And then he goes on, since He is Lord of heaven and earth, He doesn't live in man-made temples. And human hands can't serve His needs, for He has no needs. He Himself gives life and breath to everything, and He satisfies every need. The Greeks would have believed that their gods needed to be placated, that their gods needed certain things to be validated. And Paul says that it's this God satisfies every need. He Himself gives life and breath to everything. He doesn't live in man-made temples. Every one of the shrines that was set up would have been made by men. And there's a part of the people that knew that those shrines weren't the God. They were a statue made by man. And Paul says, this God doesn't live in man-made temples. This God's over it all. And no man-made image will be able to capture this God. And then it says, His purpose, he's talking about God. His purpose was for the nations, which is always a huge thing for me because it was about the nations, not just the nation of Israel. His purpose was for the nations to seek after God and perhaps feel their way toward them. And as I was reviewing this weekend, that feel their way toward Him just kept jumping off the page at me. And the way I kept seeing that as I reviewed this weekend was it's almost like they're blind. You know, or it's dark, and you can't see your way to where you're going, so you have to feel your way towards where you're going. And it's almost like this idea of they know what they know, but they don't know what they don't know. And they can't see clearly the path. And so they have to feel their way toward Him. And God's purpose was that people would be able to feel their way towards Him even when they can't see their way towards Him. But he doesn't want to be a God that's just sought after. He wants to be a God that's found. And it says that they would feel their way toward Him and find Him. Though He is not far from any of us. And imagine being told that God's purpose is for the nations to find Him and to feel their way toward Him. And He's not far. Now, imagine that you're the one in the dark. Remember the old game, Hot Cold? Hot, cold, hot, cold. You hide an item, and they have to go find it, and you tell them, oh, now you're cold. You're cold, not anywhere close to it. Oh, now getting warmer, oh, you're hot, hot, hot. And you know the excitement that comes in those kids when they start getting in that hot zone? And they start getting really excited because they know they're getting closer to finding what they're looking for? I wonder if in this moment the people of Athens, if it was like hot and cold, hot and cold, and they feel their way toward Him, though He is not far. And when Paul said to them, though He is not far from us, they're like, then tell us more. We're getting warmer, we're getting warmer, we're getting warmer. Though He is not far from any of us. For in Him we live and move and exist. As some of your own poets have said, and they would have said this in a polytheistic approach, but for centuries, the Greek philosophers and Greek poets had said that people are the offspring of the gods. And Paul leverages what they say to go and say, but we are children of the one God, not offspring of the many gods. He is laying out a case for what they don't know. And then he goes on to say, and since this is true, we shouldn't think of God as an idol designed by craftsmen from gold or silver or stone. We shouldn't think of God as the shrine, as the image. He's so much more. No man-made idol, no idol designed by craftsmen will ever capture the essence and the truth and the nature and who God is. And then he says, God overlooked people's ignorance about these things in earlier times, but now He commands everyone everywhere to repent of their sins and turn to Him. For He has set a day for judging the world with justice by the man He has appointed. And He proved to everyone who this is by raising Him from the dead. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was just told that God has set a day for judging the world with justice by one person, I'd be pretty sure that I'd want to know who that one person is. I'd be pretty sure to say, well, I know what I know, and what I don't know is who the one is. So since I don't know that, that's what I want to know. And fortunately, Paul tells them, and Paul tells people like us that God proved who the person was by raising Him from the dead. And here's the thing. When Paul tells the people in Athens this, he can tell them that he knows Jesus rose from the dead because he knows the people who were with Jesus before He was dead, and he knows those people who knew Jesus after He rose from the dead. They saw Him. He can go to these people and he say, you know, I know Peter. I know James. I know John. I've talked to them. I know they saw Jesus because they told me they saw Jesus. And they told me this and this and this, which proved that they saw Jesus. That it wasn't a figment of their imagination. It wasn't something that they made up. That this really happened. That they really encountered Jesus after he rose from the dead. And then Paul could go, and if that's not enough, there was this day. There was this day where I was on the road to Damascus. And I was on the road to Damascus on my way there to persecute followers of Jesus because I didn't believe it. And while I was on the road to Damascus, I was literally stopped in my tracks and I was blinded by a light. And I had a personal encounter with the resurrected Jesus. I saw the resurrected Jesus. And so I can tell you clearly that he is indeed raised from the dead. And God proved who the one was who would judge the world by raising him from the dead. And then Paul goes on to say, when they heard Paul speak about the resurrection of the dead, some laughed in contempt. But others said, we want to hear more about this later. That ended Paul's discussion with them, but some joined him and became believers. You see, the whole belief system of the Greeks in Athens was based on prosperity. So their mindset was, this world and prospering in this world is all that matters. And there was no resurrection. Bless you. There was no resurrection to be concerned about, because all that there was this life, and this life was all that mattered. And so when Paul talks to them about resurrection, some laughed in contempt. When he tells them there's more to this life, and God proved it by raising Jesus from the dead. It says, but some said, we want to hear more about this idea. And then it says, some joined him and became believers. And one of the cool things is that one of the people who became a believer was one of the individuals on the high council. So sometimes we know what we know, and we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes we are well served to consider what we don't know. Because had the people in Athens been like the people in Thessalonica, and the people in Berea were a little more open-minded, and Paul was able to leverage what they knew to point them to what they didn't know, because this unknown God wasn't a God just to cover their bases. It's a God who desires deeply to know and be known. Not just for people in Athens, but for people in Franklin, for people in Whiteland, for people in New Whiteland, for people in Bargersville. You guys have seen the commercial with the news guy that says he had trouble pronouncing cities' names like Bargersville. I'm like, how difficult is it to pronounce Bargersville? But whatever. For people in Greenwood, for people in Indianapolis, for people in Indiana, for people in the Midwest, for people in America. You see where this is going, right? It's almost like when Jesus said, you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in Judea and in Samaria and to the ends of the earth. God is not a God who wants to remain an unknown God. He's a God who wants to know and be known deeply by people he loves more than we could possibly imagine. Let me pray for you this morning. Dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this time together. Thank you for the opportunity that we have to know what we know and to be honest about what we don't know. And thank you for loving us enough to help us know what we don't know, to be known by you and for us to know you in deeply personal ways. Thank you for loving us enough to send Jesus to redeem our sin, to provide the path to right relationship with you through for all who will place their trust in him, and for proving that he was indeed your son, the Messiah sent to redeem us by raising him from the dead. Pray us in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so we'll roll the preview video for next week. When the preview video is over, you're dismissed. Thanks for choosing to spend this part of your day with us, and we'll see you next week.